Wednesday, April 17th, 8:32 a.m. I'd like to welcome all of you and open the House Task Force on O and C Counties. Good morning, colleagues, guests. Thank you for coming and providing information to us. To those of you watching electronically, hopefully you can hear and see us well. We're glad you're with us as well. This morning, we're going to have a real quick conversation around Senate joint memorials. I'm just going to talk just very briefly about the those two memorials and then talk just a real quick so that everyone knows that while we are meeting here within a half an hour, the actual Association of O&C Counties Board of Directors meeting is also happening here in town, and it's relevant because they're working on some of the same information that we might be. Elizabeth, do you have any other opening comments, things that we need to talk about?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay. So what I'll start with, when we talk about the Senate Joint Memorials, if you will remember within this task force, we had a discussion around Senate Joint Memorial 6, basically urges Congress to adopt the DeFazio-Schrader-Walden Plan, known as the O&C Trust Conservation and Jobs Plan. And then Senate Joint Memorial 10 urges Congress to designate 2.7 million acres of O&C lands as O&C trust lands. The reason we bring those up is, as you all may or may not know, this task force can't act on those pieces of legislation, but eventually would likely make a recommendation on either of those memorials to the Rules Committee. But again, given that the O&C County's Board of Directors meeting is also happening today, and as I look through their agenda, they, in turn, are discussing Senate joint memorials. So we don't want to poke one another in the eye, and in light of that, we'll just have the conversation, know that we're both looking at those, wait to hear a little bit back from them and get some response on those issues. So, any comments, colleagues, on those two memorials? We know they're there. We've had a good discussion around them. If not, then I'm going to shake up the order of appearance here just a little bit. I thought Representative Hicks was coming down briefly, but to get us started, we're going to have an update on public safety in O&C counties, so I'll open that informational meeting, and I would invite up Alex Gardner, Lane County District Attorney, and if Representative Hicks comes in, his staff is searching him out in the building, then we'll invite him to join you. Good morning.
Good morning, Co-Chair. Thank you for allowing me to present this morning. There's an awful lot to talk about, and so I'm going to try and speed talk my way through it so that there's a little bit of time from a little bit of time for discussion.
And Alex, we appreciate that.
Alex Gardner, Lane County District Attorney. I apologize.
Thank you, sir.
So the first slide that you have shows what happened to the Lane County criminal justice system after the crash in the economy in 1981. You can see that it was a pretty deep dive. I'm sure you all remember how traumatic that was. And as you can see, our law enforcement capacity never recovered after 81. This is what the Lane County federal payment profile looks like. We've divided it here between general fund, road fund, and school fund. It also shows the Title II and III money. But if you look back to 1977, you can see that we were much better off even back then, and you know how much more a dollar bought in 1977. Please note how sharply it declines between 2009 and 2012. We've essentially fallen off the cliff for discretionary general fund dollars. This shows you where we were in 2007. I had originally, in terms of police sworn capacity per thousand in comparison with other states in 2007, we were in fantastic shape in 2007 in comparison with where we are today. I don't have the slide that shows Lane County's present sworn staffing, but we're actually closer to 0.5 than 1 now. So we're several orders of magnitude out of the normal zone. The slide that I didn't include, that I had intended to include, shows where Oregon was in about 1970. And we looked normal then. We were about in the middle of the pack. We essentially eviscerated law enforcement staffing over the last 45 years. I apologize for the small size here. What I was intending to show is how we compare crime-wise with other states, property crimes in particular. As you know, it's crime volume that represents our workload, not population necessarily. And the reality is property crime takes a lot of law enforcement, absorbs a lot of law enforcement time, and frankly, it requires a lot of local capacity and corrections and supervision to function properly. So our need is profound and our resources are ridiculously inadequate. Here's a look at Lane County in 2007 when the county was contemplating adding jail capacity. This shows our capacity per 1,000 reported index crimes. Our hope back then was to that the county commissioners would fund the additional 84 beds that were possible, for which there was money under the existing ONC funding or the Secure Rural Schools Act funding. As you can see, our objective was to get almost to 25% of the state average. This slide is really important because when we're talking about $32 million, for example, in the trust fund that might be spread amongst the Oregon counties under 3194, if we got all of that money in Lane County, it wouldn't put us in the ballpark of normal. And the reason simply is that we're at $1.27, I know, per 1,000 of assessed value. I know other counties are in even worse shape. But a dollar per 1,000 in Lane County generates about $27, $28 million gross. So if we got just up to the big metro county average, that would be another $2 per 1,000. That's almost $60 million. And as you know, the metro counties aren't awash in money. They need help too. But so we've got a 60 plus million dollar annual hole. And so the possibility of getting $3 or $5 million a year, I'd love to have it, but it just doesn't help us really fix the problem. So here's where we are today, much worse than even in 2007. You can see that we are at less than one-fifth of the average Oregon capacity on a per 1,000 crimes basis. If we are successful in getting the levy that's pending now, we'll vote on it in May, we'll get up to 18 beds per 1,000, which is, you know, horrific. But that would allow us to at least hold Measure 11 offenders. There are two additional slides which, as a result of my technological incompetence, we couldn't get into the PowerPoint presentation, but you have hard copies of them. One of them shows what's happened to the Oregon State Police patrol staffing over that period of time. I suspect you've probably seen this from the state police, but I included it in my presentation to underscore what's happened to our capacity. The Lane County Sheriff's Office has gone from 99 deputies in our Patrol Services Division to 20. We now have 135 jail beds. If we wanted to look like normal USA, we'd need something on the order of 800 to 1,000. We go to 85 in June if this measure doesn't pass. We go to 26 beds the following year if we don't have any replacement money. To put it in perspective, at 26 beds, we only hold about two-thirds of the offenders we're currently holding on homicide charges. That would mean holding none of the people who are being held for sodomy, kidnap, rape one, robbery one, and so on. It's unimaginable, but then again, where we are today is unimaginable. The other graph that I included, and I'm afraid we didn't have time to work with the scale much, shows what's happened to the state general fund over the same period of time. I know that you all are working with enormous challenges at the state, but if you look at what's happened to the state general fund over the last 30 years, it's grown several fold. I mean, it's several 100% what it was 30 years ago. Now look at the Lane County general fund over that period of time. Imagine basically, if you wanted to put yourselves in the shoes of the Lane County commissioners, you would give up about 75% of your current general fund and then try and fund essential services. It's It's simply unmanageable. And the problem, of course, is that the cities and the fire districts and the libraries, everybody and their dog has now absorbed that available tax base. Lane County has zero chance of passing a levy at $2 or $3 a thousand. So I don't know where, I don't know where the solution lies, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for District Attorney Gardner?
So just so I understand, Alex, so the general fund that this reflects here is just property taxes?
The general fund is, it's not just property taxes, because a good chunk of the ONC or Secure Rural Schools money used to pour into
we're part fund. Of the general fund.
Yes.
We're okay, thank you.
Representative Freeman?
thank you, Mr. Hanna. So when you say the general fund was taxes and Rural School Act, so before that it was timber receipt money. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, co-chairs and Representative Freeman, that's right. It used to be timber money, and we would be awash in money if we had that rate of return again.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate you coming up. I wish we had an easy answer for you.
Thank you.
I think we all know that is not the case.
And
please.
Coach Hanna, I just also want to thank you for coming, because I think, as I said previously, people think of Lane County and they think of Eugene and Springfield and don't understand that we were one of the largest recipients of Secure Rural School funds and also greatly benefited from timber receipts when we had those jobs available. But, you know, the idea of having 26 county jail beds and what that actually means, I'm not sure what our plan B is. How do we handle that? What are the legal ramifications of that? What are the safety ramifications of that? I mean, I know that's a horrific thing to have to plan for, but I'm hoping that we're able to do something. But if we're not, what do we do?
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Hoyle. I don't know how to answer that. We are in territory that it was totally unimaginable 5 or 10 years ago. And, you know, we've gone from 11.5 FTE investigators in my office to three, two of which are almost entirely grant-funded and so dedicated. So we basically have one investigator left for general purpose work. The sheriff's office has gone from 26 detectives to a low of two. We're up to five now. But again, it's important to realize that the population has grown 25% over that period of time. So, and we've gone from, as I said, 99 in patrol services to 20. And what that means when you figure out that it takes five and a half bodies to make up one 24/7 post, that means that we don't have 24-hour coverage in Lane County. And with the state police basically eviscerated at the same time, we have no coverage over a county that's the size of Connecticut. I think we're very fortunate that we haven't had more horrific events, although, frankly, we've had plenty. We've had domestic violence offenders released from jail and immediately go kill their spouse. We've had all kinds of horrific developments like that, and what we hear from the community, frankly, is crickets. I don't get it. But thank you very much for letting me testify.
Thanks for your work, and thanks for coming.
Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
I understand you're here to present an opinion that comes from home.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Representative Wally Hicks, Josephine County. This is a statement that was provided to me by Josephine County District Attorney Stephen Campbell. He authorized me to provide it to you. Prior to the deep budget cuts taken in year 2012-13, the District Attorney's Office was staffed with 9 deputy DAs and a corresponding support staff required to do the work. Even at that level, the District Attorney's Office staffing was inadequate to handle all of the case referrals from the police agencies. The District Attorney managed the overflow caseload by reducing most Class B and C misdemeanors to violations. This has been developing over a number of years as the caseload outran prosecution resources. With the loss of 4 of the 9 deputy DAs, 4 legal secretaries, and the receptionist in July 2012, the district attorney was forced to dramatically reduce prosecution of new cases. Almost no misdemeanors were filed, including most DUIs and domestic assaults. Felony drug cases, except for those with a presumptive prison sentence, were dropped for the most part, as were Class C felony property crimes that did not reach a high level of loss, such as burglary 2, theft 1, unauthorized use of motor vehicle. Our office was closed to the public for all but a few hours a day. In September 2012, when the county received in excess of $4 million in federal funds, the county commissioners determined to save most of that money in order to have funding to keep the criminal justice system at status quo for one more year, 2013 to 14. A small amount was designated to the district attorney, the sheriff, court security, and the juvenile department. The district attorney was able to rehire 1.5 deputy DAs and a half-time receptionist. This allowed us to increase our filing of felony property crimes and to file some, but not all, of the drug possession cases. We were able to file most DUIs and some of the most serious misdemeanor domestic assaults. We were able to open the office to the public for 5 hours per day. So that's the end of his statement. If the federal money doesn't get renewed, then return to scenario A, or maybe worse. That's how it's playing out on the ground. We in Josephine County, like Wayne, have a period of time every single day in which there is essentially no police coverage in the rural areas because the state police are spread so thin. They simply can't cover all of the cases. They cover emergent cases, but oftentimes by the time they arrive on the scene, the perpetrator has fled, there's not much left to investigate, and they have to move on and put out the next fire. So that's my statement.
Thank you for bringing that. Questions for Representative Hicks this morning?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, I'm going to try to bring up a panel of three. Sheriff Gil Gilbertson from Josephine County, Sheriff John Hanlon from Douglas County, and Sheriff John Bishop from Curry County. And I think, gentlemen, if you spread the chairs, you can all get to the dais. It is up to you who you would like to proceed first, but as you do, please identify yourselves and proceed.
I'm Gil Gilbertson, Sheriff, Josephine County. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for listening to us this morning. I've got a PowerPoint presentation. You've also got hard copies here, so that you'll have that to review later. What I'd like to talk about is the negative impact that loss of funding is created in Josephine County. Okay, I'm challenged here, and I admit it. Okay, thank you. I probably put more into this than was necessary, but it's information that you can review at a later time and digest. Talking in terms of the state of the economy, local and state level, 11 to 12% unemployment is probably a very, very conservative number for Josephine County. It's probably closer to 20. That's just an abstract guess. We've been prohibited from using our natural resources. We lost 500,000 acres from the Biscuit Fire. Since 1990, the state of Oregon's lost 188 mills. We cannot use the revenue so that we can't sustain ourselves any longer, really is the thrust of the problem we're having. Over the last 20 years, 12,000 timber jobs were lost. We have inadequate funding for our juvenile facility, deputy DA, the district attorney, and law enforcement officers, and I'll cover that in a little more detail later. 16% of the younger families have left Oregon. 300 students less in school this year than last. 70% of our children participate in the free, ready, prepared meal program in the schools. 31% of the children in Josephine County live in poverty, and our wages are quite low, and the jobs are not that many. Population, we're about 82,000, 1,642 square miles. We just reduced our force by 65% this year, this cycle. The average deputy per 1,000 population in the United States is 2 deputy per 1,000. In the western states, it's about 1.8. In Josephine County, in the beginning of July, we'll have one patrol deputy to cover the entire county. That's it. Historical perspective, as you know, Measure 50 in 1997 fixed a permanent rate, and for us at that time it was 58 cents per thousand. We are the lowest in the state of Oregon. I want to point out, too, when we had the ability to use our resources, there was an 11-year period between 1970 and 1981 that the county did not collect taxes for county services. So it was basically a free ride. We had that much money available. It's created a real roller coaster effect for us. Some of our officers can walk across the hallway and make $1,000 more a month. It's been a nightmare for us for some time. We've actually turned into a training facility, and we've citizens have thrown away well over $10 million over the years. Let's see. Historical, our budget, you can see in the year 2007-2008 was the very first time our general fund money was given to the sheriff's office. Prior to that, it was always supported by federal monies. And you can see in 12-13, we took the biggest hit because we had no federal subsidies to carry us. Out of all the money collected in Josephine County, I think there'll be $61 million this cycle. Only 5% of that money actually stays with the county. The rest of it is for schools and everything else. So the portion we have to operate with is very, very small. Our priorities, life, liberties, and property. We did a survey with the citizens, and they wanted more patrols, they wanted shorter response time, and they wanted an adequate number of beds to hold folks that decided to break the law. I've included some of the statutory duties of a sheriff according to ORS. There's a couple of pages of those. This was where we were last year. We had 98 employees. We had a $12 million budget. We have gone now to about a $5.2 million budget for this next year. You can see that we generate internally about 41% of the revenue that we're going to be using for that budget. We rent federal beds, and quite frankly, without those federal bed rentals, we would probably close our jail today. It's that important to us. Cost for the upcoming layoffs, we don't have that federal support any longer. The lion's share of the money collected in our county goes to the state and to the federal government, so we only get that 5.6% to work with. And there's some other issues that created a problem. The workers' comp increase, 8%, health insurance, 4%, employers' PERS, 4.5%, county PERS bond, 2%, and leave liability increased by 2%. So albeit we're getting about $200,000 more this year for this next year than we had last year, those costs have actually reduced our ability to provide services. So what we did was this year, with that 65% reduction, we had to decimate our agency. This is what it looks like today. We have 35 employees. This next year, now keep in mind these numbers are fluid and things can change, but the numbers I had to work with right now, I only have 3 patrol deputies today. I'll have to take 2 of them and put them in the jail to keep the jail open. We have 2 court security deputies. One of those will go to the jail. I have to keep the jail open. So one deputy is what we'll have to work on the patrol. As you can see here, this is the kind of productivity that we were doing in comparison last year. The arrests are down. The calls for service, they're still quite high, but our support services picked up for it. We lost a lot of people, but the ones that are left have to pick up that slack. And I constantly hear, well, you can't be as busy now as you were then. It's just the opposite. The City of Grants Pass, Department of Public Safety, Joe Henner, the chief, provided me with this information, and you can see the uptick in the types of crimes that are occurring. Property crimes are the highest. In fact, the criminals are so emboldened. I wish you'd have been there the day that we had to let them out of the jail. That was quite a sight to see. We're looking at, as you can see here, the numbers. I'll have two admin. I have no investigators. I had no investigators this budget. So if I take one patrol deputy off the road to investigate a homicide, then the rest of us are really sunk. In fact, OSP has come down to help us. They brought in four more patrol deputies, and they were concerned with our safety. And we do have an unsafe environment. We have a 262-bed jail. We were up to 150, 160 beds in 2011. We dropped down to 99. We will drop down to 60. 28 of those beds will be for the locals, for the Measure 11s, which we have more than 28 beds. So we'll be turning some folks loose, and the other 32 beds are for the federal revenue that we can generate. Some of the types of people that we let out, you can see in that slide. Makes you really feel uncomfortable. At least it does me. We've already addressed this one. Insurance rates are increasing now. Property values are decreasing. Community growth stagnates. Economy growth recedes. Community and personal safety becomes critical. Folks are now taking the law into their own hands. There are several different, I hate to use the word vigilante groups, that are operating. But we're not there, and that's what's going to happen. All crimes have increased. The citizens are taking it into their own hands. It has demoralized our agency. Several different options. You got tax district, you got levies, you got statewide sales tax, similar to Washington State, which I believe that money is dedicated to the sheriffs of that state. So there's different things that we can do. Creating jobs, and let me address that if I can just a second. I spent over 6 years in Bosnia and Kosovo rebuilding a decimated country, two decimated countries. And quite frankly, those countries would not have gone through what they did had people had jobs. That was the problem. And that's what's going to happen. Good people are going to do bad things when they're not working. So if there's anything that we can do, it would be to create jobs and put people back to work. So with that, I'll ask any questions.
Thank you, Sheriff. Do you have specific questions? Thank you, Representative.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Co-Chair Hanna. We all know that we have a serious, significant problem, but it becomes very stark when you look at a presentation like this. It brings it very clearly into focus. And the thing that came to mind when you were going through this presentation was, how do you take a deputy and send him out on patrol and send him on a call when there's nobody there to back him up?
That's a good point, because I take those calls myself from home at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's not comfortable. It's not safe. All it would take is to lose one. And just the surviving family lawsuit that would come from that. I came from the state of Iowa, and cities have gone bankrupt out of that type of litigation. The community must provide some level of safety for those officers that are out there in the field. It's not safe. You know, right now I'm depending on OSP to help us. They just brought in more people. Whose job is it? It's our job. We just can't perform it. It's not safe, but we do our job.
Well, thank you for your good work. And again, thank you for bringing this into very clear focus for us.
Thank you.
Sheriff, thank you. And I do want to move on, but I want to throw a thought out there. And so if either of you or all three of you think through this, you know, one of the conversations that we continue to have is, even with reauthorization on a sliding downward scale, it appears that it's still an anchor hooked to you. I mean, even with reauthorization, if you say we're going to start at where we currently are and slide off, it doesn't bring the ship back to floating, so to speak. So as you make your comments, if you would address that as you go through, because I think, Sheriff, you've made a good point. I think those of us in ONC counties have continually said it's not about reauthorization. It's about a forest plan
right. That
provides long-term, sustained yield, harvest, and wood products jobs for our counties. That's really what does it, because the receipts pay the bill. We can have good public safety, but we can't do it without that. And just the check doesn't make the difference. So, gentlemen, proceed.
John Hanlon, Douglas County Sheriff. Good morning, and thanks for having us here today to testify, Co-Chair Hanna and other members of the task force. Douglas County, as you may or may not know, is one of the larger counties in the state, the largest county west of the Cascades. We are 5,134 square miles, 107,000 residents. We span from the coast to the crest of the Cascades, and we have 90 miles of Interstate 5 running through the heart of the county. More than 50% of Douglas County is publicly owned lands managed by the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and State Forest. As you know, the sheriff of any county is mandated and required by state law to carry out certain duties as defined by ORS 206.010. Once being a timber-rich county, Douglas County had few, if any, funding problems for public safety. As revenue streams continue to dry up, myself and sheriffs before me were and continue to be forced to make difficult decisions that often have a significant impact on mandated services and on the safety of the citizens in our counties. I want to go through, I apologize for not having a PowerPoint presentation, but I'll try to draw the best picture I can for you here regarding the situation in Douglas County. Approximately over the past 10 years, our budget has continued to slip away and take pretty significant cuts. Not as significant as what Sheriff Gilbertson explained or the explanation that the DA Alex Gardner explained, but it certainly is headed there, and we have had issues. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office budget in its peak back in about 1999 was a $20 million a year budget. We are now operating with a $15 million a year budget, but keep in mind also that the cost of doing business has certainly increased. Personnel services is on the rise with insurance and PERS and all those issues that drive up those personnel costs. Timber receipts for the county, back in 1989, Douglas County brought in $50.3 million in timber receipts. Currently, the county brings in $19.4 million. Personnel, we had 145 full-time employees back in 1998. Currently, we're down to 125. The population of Douglas County back in the 90s was around 95,000. We are now at 107,000. So the effects on public safety and our declining budget, yet a continuing to grow county. I'll talk a minute about our county jail. We still have a fairly significant size jail. We have 284 beds. I've been fortunate in convincing my county commissioners the importance of funding that facility. I don't like to make examples of people, but routinely I make examples of Lane County and Josephine County and Coos County, our surrounding counties, when I'm discussing the need to maintain jail bed space. However, in the next year, I know, based on conversations I've had with my county commissioners, that jail space is in jeopardy. The problem with reducing, obviously, jail space and beds available to house criminals is it creates less safety for the inmates that are in custody. It is less safe for the deputies that are in the facility monitoring the inmates. And, of course, ultimately, it makes for an unsafe community. Over the past 10 years, we've lost two home monitoring deputies. These are deputies that we used to use to monitor inmates that were allowed to be in home custody. That saves the taxpayers a lot of money when you can put a bracelet on those individuals, low-level offenders, and make them stay home. We no longer have the ability to provide for those deputies, so we don't have that program anymore. We've lost two booking clerks. These were positions that booked inmates into the jail, did the routine questions of the inmates. We now have to rely on deputies to do that. instead of civilian clerks, and of course that takes deputies away from doing other duties throughout the jail. We've got the diminished ability to use work crews. You know, when we had enough corrections deputies in the facility, we could assemble work crews. We would often take work crews outside of the facility and take them out to the county shops and do maintenance on vehicles and equipment, maybe out in the parking lot, maybe on the courthouse grounds. And, of course, that ability has gone by the wayside. We've lost our court security coordinator, which is a position assigned to coordinate all the security in the courtrooms in Douglas County. Obviously, the loss of that position results in the courts being less secure. We have mental health issues like never before in Douglas County in the jail. That's as a result of our behavioral health unit at the hospital closing down about 6 years ago. We have a very high percentage of inmates in the facility now that suffer from some level of mental health. And, of course, that reduces everyone's safety in the jail, and it manifests and worsens mental health for the incarcerated individuals that are in the facility. Our records and civil division, which is a mandated service of the sheriff, we've lost a couple of full-time civil process deputies that are responsible for serving subpoenas and claims and restraining orders and other court orders. That responsibility is now passed on to regular patrol deputies. We have a reduction in staff in the civil division that resulted in us not being able to keep our office open 24 hours a day. I know a lot of departments have lost that years ago, but that was something that we took great pride in, was being a 24-hour department. We went from 5 animal control officers down to 1, and in Douglas County, there's a lot of dogs. I don't recall now the estimated population of dogs, but we do have a lot of animals. And so one animal control officer is tasked with trying to handle all of the dog bites and the nuisance animals, animals at large, as well as animal neglect cases. We've also eliminated 4 waymasters positions altogether. We no longer have any waymasters. Of course, we don't have the log trucks and the trucks hauling over our county roads like we used to. But nevertheless, there is no waymaster or oversize enforcement anymore in the county. As far as our patrol and enforcement division goes, it too has taken some hits. We've lost 6 positions out of patrol over the last several years. That's resulted in the reduction or reduced response to vehicle accidents, crimes in progress, past crimes, traffic enforcement, and of course all other public safety issues. We've lost 5 positions that we had assigned in our schools. And, of course, with the latest school shootings and mass shootings trends that we're seeing, that greatly concerns me. We have 1 officer that's a half-time position that is able to spend some time during the school year in 2 of the schools in the county. We lost 3 property crimes investigators. Lane County was saying our property crimes has skyrocketed, and we just don't have the ability to investigate those crimes with investigators like we once did. And oftentimes property crimes cases are fairly solvable cases, and it's just a shame that we don't have the personnel and the ability to solve those. We also lost 1 investigator that his responsibility was senior abuse. Because Douglas County has a pretty high population of retirement folks, we were beginning to see a trend of senior abuse, and not necessarily just physical abuse, but, you know, identity theft and fraud and neglect. And so we had at one time 1 detective that was responsible for investigating all of those, and he was very busy, and I'm sure he still would be if we still had the ability to maintain that position. We lost a couple of positions on our interagency narcotics team, and again, that's not a mandated service, so we just had to eliminate them. So, like many other counties surrounding Douglas County, I'm extremely troubled as to where do I make future cuts. I know the cuts are coming. I've been told to expect anywhere from 25 to 50% cuts to my budget next year. And, you know, it's a dilemma. You know, do I cut from patrol and investigations, which are non-mandated services, which takes cops off the street, which, you know, simply encourages criminals to take advantage of criminal opportunity in Douglas County? Or do I reduce the size of the county jail, which, you know, prevents the option of incarceration and forcing the early release of some criminals from the jail? Of course, if I do that, then I hamstring those departments in my county that still have patrol services and have the ability to make arrests, but they don't have any place to house their criminals. So these are the kinds of struggles that we're all facing. And without timber revenue back in the formula, making us once again, you know, one of the richest counties in the nation, I don't know what the outcome is going to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. We have specific questions for Sheriff Hanlon. John, would you mind just briefly, because we have others, but would you briefly comment on what the impact is? I think the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, like many other rural county sheriff's offices, has been a provider to small cities of contracted public safety.
That's correct.
Could you tell us briefly what kind of impacts you might have seen on that?
Well, we currently contract with five cities in Douglas County, and those contracts have shrunk as well. The cities are finding it harder and harder to provide pay for deputies in those cities. And so, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with them as well. I'm sure some of them are looking at completely eliminating those contracts and just let the dice fall as they may. And if the sheriff's office still has, you know, county patrols available that can respond to an incident in their city, hopefully we'll be able to do that. One thing I feel, you know, if I do have a contract with a city, I have an obligation, I think, to fulfill that contract before I you know, respond to calls that are outside of that city.
Thank you, Sheriff. I just want people to understand we're not just talking about just county services, because so many of, especially rural county sheriff's departments, do provide contracted services. So smaller cities are no less impacted by this. Thank you again for coming up. So, Sheriff Bishop, you've traveled a long distance. Thank you for joining us, and you also are not in an enviable position, but thank you for coming.
Well, good morning, co-chairs and committee. And like Sheriff Hanlon here, I didn't bring a PowerPoint because it's pretty simple for what I have to tell you. You've sort of...
Can I interrupt you for a minute? We got to do the official introduction,
I'm sorry, yeah.
Please.
John Bishop, Sheriff Curry County.
Thank you.
You've sort of heard from the spear. Now I'm going to show you or tell you what it feels like to be at the tip of that spear. We are looking currently, as of July 1st, depending on how the rest of the budget hearings go, of having no 911, no dispatch, no jail, no patrol. I'll have two Marine deputies because they're funded by the state, and I'll have community corrections. And they will have my position in whatever form that would be, and that would be basically the services that you would get for Curry County in law enforcement. I want to address two questions. First, one that you've asked, co-chair, that about the funding. And the funding, it's sort of a curse as well. Years ago when we were getting $4 million a year, you know, people would say, okay, we've got the funding, that's helped us. Well, the last funding we got was $800,000. The funding that they're talking about now on the sliding scale is about $600,000. That hurts us more than helps us, because our citizens see and they hear from our federal representatives that they've got the SRS or the PILT payments passed, and so they assume that we are out of the water. What they don't understand is that the amount of money that we're getting is so minuscule compared to what we were getting, and our costs have risen, that it really hurts us more than helps us. And so that, even the commissioners would probably cringe me saying I would rather not get it at all than to get that little bit of amount. Obviously, we all know, and I believe I'm sort of preaching to the choir, that's not the answer. It's never been the answer. We have got to get our citizens back to work. Our employment rate, while the official rate may be 12-13%, I will agree with Sheriff Gilbertson, that is probably more the 20-25% rate. We have people who have just flat given up, who don't get any assistance whatsoever, and they're not counted in those numbers. Our drug abuse, alcohol abuse, mental issues are increasing. I have a 50-bed jail. It's an older jail. It's full. When we bring somebody in, we release somebody, as in several of the bigger jails. So these issues are all the same that you've heard, and you've heard over and over and over again. The uniqueness that Curry County has is our location. We're not on the I-5 corridor. We're sort of at the end of the road, so to speak. The counties that surround us aren't in great shape. Coos County is probably the best shape out of all of them, but we have Josephine next to us. Del Norte County, which is our southern county for California, is also in the same shape. So the rescue is not there. As far as state police, Superintendent Evans has done what he can. I have 4 troopers. That's it. Right now, I only have 4 deputies. So then if we combine the troopers and deputies together, that gives us 8 law enforcement officers to cover, 1,600 square miles roughly, and 23,000 citizens. We do not have 24 hours coverage. There are some days we don't have coverage at all. We are also part, of the area where the drug cartels love to grow their marijuana. And as you heard earlier from the district attorney, I'm amazed we're not hearing more from the citizens. I would have thought we would have had an absolute outcry, and we're not hearing that. The environmental damage that these grows do, let alone the illegal activity that they spawn, is significant, and we're not hearing that. Our crime rate is stayed about the same. But understand there's a lot of crime that's just not being reported anymore either, because as we hear all the time, well, you're busy, so we don't want to bother you with that. Not understanding that maybe this theft here could lead us, and solving this theft could lead us into solving numerous other crimes. We're currently investigating a couple homicides that have happened, which are very labor-intensive. They're expensive, and we're at the point now of, when this happens again or another significant event again, what do we do? 2 years ago we had the tsunami that strained us then, and today I'm not sure we could do that. To give you a quick picture, when I joined in 1988 as a deputy, we had 16 patrol deputies. Today we have 4. We had 3 sergeants. We have 0. We had 3 detectives. We have 1. And I'd call it about half, because sometimes he's in the jail. And I could go on and on. We had lieutenants, and we had undersheriffs. I have none of that anymore. And so we're sort of at the tip of the spear, waiting to see what happens. And even if the commissioners choose to use all reserve funds, including the PERS, including unemployment, and including every nook and cranny that they may have some money, we still don't have enough to survive for the next fiscal year. The other issue that goes with that is Title III funds. Title III funds, as you know, are connected to the SRS and PILT payments. The GOA has decided to put them under guidelines under the Forest Service, which basically make those funds unusable. And so all the ONC counties who have Title III money that is dedicated for search and rescue or emergency services or wildfire land mitigation, those funds are tied up. We can't use them unless we can get the federal government to undo those guidelines. So that's sort of what it looks like from the tip. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Sheriff Bishop. Questions specifically for Sheriff Bishop? Sheriff, would you comment briefly? You talk about your county and you mentioned state police. Would you just for the record tell us what other public safety is available? I mean, from if I understand right, you have two cities with a police force.
Correct, co-chair and committee. We actually have three cities.
Three, okay.
And I have Port Orford, which is a three-man department. I have the city of Go Beach, which is a four-man. And I have the city of Brookings, which is a 14-man department. I used to be the assistant chief of police for the city of Brookings. Some days I probably wish I still was. Due to the fact of what we have to address with sending our deputies out alone on a call that should be handled by maybe three or four officers, let alone just one. It puts the cities, and I think you're going to hear from a chief this morning, but it puts them in a very... The situation it puts them in is not good. Their citizens are paying them to provide security for them inside the city limits. When they see that we have no coverage and we have a crime being committed that's outside the city limits, it is putting the chiefs in a position to tell his officers they can't go out and handle that call. Because the citizens and the council have told them, you're not doing the county any good by covering their calls, because nobody's ever going to vote for anything if they continue to cover those calls. We have medical who won't respond to a medical emergency because they feel it's not safe, and they're waiting for a deputy and or trooper that may be 3-4 hours away before they will respond to that call. You have firemen that are in the same situation that will not respond to a fire until law enforcement is on scene. And you have the city sitting there, and of course you get these young officers that are just raring to go, and they have to stop at that city line unless there is, you know, we absolutely know that imminent life threat is there, and it puts them in a very, very difficult situation.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up. It's just again, I want to paint this picture. And, gentlemen, I wish that you were sitting in front of our federal delegation so that they clearly understood from the shaft to the tip of the spear, as you put it, where we are and where citizens currently are and soon could be without a plan. And, again, we're very grateful.
And, Coach Hanna, and, sir, I so appreciate your comments. I have a long history in the eastern part of your county. My family has had a home at Agnes since 1947, and we unfortunately have had occasion one time to avail ourselves of your services, and it was in a time when it takes 45 minutes to respond to Agnes if you're in Gold Beach. If you're in Brookings, it's farther. And on occasion, we have some bad actors that are misbehaving in our neck of the woods, and we appreciate your services greatly, but it's an enormous problem for those of us who live farther out in the hinterlands and on occasion need services. We do have medical first responders there that are trained that can work at that end of the road, but for medical emergencies, too, it's an enormous problem and a grave concern of the residents of Agnes, certainly.
Yeah.
Thank you for your good work, and difficult to know that you're in this position, and we appreciate what you're trying to do, and we know it's serious, and we need to fix it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Safe travels. With that, I'd like to invite to the dais Police Chief Mike Grover from Cottage Grove. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Co-Chair, Committee.
Chief, you may have to move that microphone a little bit centered to you, but you don't have to be that close. It's just, okay. There you go. And for the record, do your introduction and proceed.
My name is Mike Grover. I'm the police chief in the city of Cottage Grove. Cottage Grove is located about 20 miles south of Eugene. We have a population of less than 10,000 people. What we've accomplished in Cottage Grove is we've sort of become self-sufficient just based on the fact that Lane County has not been able to provide the services that we need. In 2012 and 2013, we had 63 felony cases that we handled through municipal court just based on the fact that we knew there would not be prosecution in Lane County. Not their fault. They just don't have the manpower to do it. We run a 16-bed jail, municipal jail, that we keep full a lot, and I am one of the cities in Cottage Grove. I believe all of them but Oak Ridge have their own municipal jail just based on the fact that Lane County turns more people loose and they can put them in. It's been pretty interesting when we arrest somebody and they say, well, give me my ticket so I can be on my way. And we're able to say, well, no, we're not just going to give you a ticket. You're going to jail. I know my friend Jerry Smith in Springfield was a chief, and he was instrumental in building a 100-bed jail in Springfield. And it has really reduced the amount of minor crimes in Springfield because they're in jail. We've ran our jail since 1983, and it's been very, very successful. The sheriff was telling you that, yeah, in fact, the city administrators and the council tell municipal police departments that, no, you're not going outside of the city because that's the county's responsibility. We've taken sort of a different light on that. We will go and we will cover sheriff's deputies wherever they go. We'll cover OSP wherever we have to go. But we're not going to handle the crimes and the calls outside the city. And we get called all the time for that. And it's really pretty hard to tell the citizens that, no, we're not coming out there. Just because your address says Cottage Grove, that doesn't mean that you're going to be covered by the police department. One of the things that we have done in the city of Cottage Grove is we provide a school resource officer for South Lane School District. We cover all the crimes that happen in the schools. We have several rural schools, and we just take care of them because we know that they're very vulnerable, and if we don't, nobody will. And as we saw in Connecticut, it's been it can get awful. I feel really guilty listening to some of these sheriffs when they tell me what's happening to their budget, because I'm going to increase my budget by 3% this year. This is what I was told I could do. I have 17 officers and about 29 total personnel. And I sort of feel guilty when I hear what these sheriffs are going through, and they're the chief law enforcement officers of the county. And I know it's all based on they're not cutting enough trees and they're not selling enough lumber. I wish I had something that I could do for them, but my responsibility is to protect the citizens of Cottage Grove, and we've been able to do that. I don't know how much longer that's going to take place, but, you know, so far we've been very, very lucky and very successful. I'll answer any questions that you have regarding this.
Okay, Chief, thank you for coming. Questions specifically for Chief Grover? Well, we're glad that you feel bad, because we're glad that you're in a position to do so, because you haven't heard a lot of great stories here. The city of Cottage Grove has been able to maintain what seems like quite an adequate and robust public safety, and I think your citizens there are grateful for that. So
thank
you for your service in doing so. I was a bit remiss in that I did miss Sheriff Bob Wolf of Polk County. Sheriff, please excuse me for that, and I would like to invite you to the dais.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me a quick moment to testify. My name is Bob Wolf. I'm sheriff of Polk County. I'm here this morning before you after listening to the testimony of the other sheriffs. I didn't actually come to testify today, but I think there's a couple of other points that are pretty important. And I can speak from the fact that Polk County is, we're starting to follow the same general path as Josephine County and Douglas County and Curry County because we're another timber county. And with that, I'm in the process now of, for the first time in since 1984, we've reduced our patrols to less than 24 hours. And we're just across the river from Marion County. Now, with that said, I'm also having difficulty trying to hire people when I do have vacancies. I actually had an applicant come in. We gave him a final job offer, and he turned me down for a job that he had actually gone through the whole process for, and his statement to me was, you don't have a stable financial outlook, and so I have to reconsider, and I can't accept your job. This is going to be a problem for public safety. This will be a huge issue because as officers are laid off, we can't get them back because of the requirements of DPSST. Once they've been away from the job for a certain amount of time, they have to go back through certification processes. It takes 16 weeks of them to go to the academy, and then almost every agency in the state requires another 12 weeks of field training. So with that, and you get a raw recruit, you have the 16 weeks, 12 weeks of field training, plus it takes another at least 6 months on top of that before they can actually feel comfortable being out there by themselves. So law enforcement feeds the judicial system. We are the front end of that judicial system, and you'll see this big wave occur over a period of years in which when law enforcement's not out there taking the bad guy off the street and feeding them into the system, once we're not there, then you're not going to need the district attorney's office for criminal cases. Then the courts are going to start having less to do. There's going to be less people going to prison. There's going to be less need for parole and probation officers. So when there's less boots on the street feeding the judicial system, at the end, 5-6 years from now, you're going to see this depletion at the other end of the process. But my main point is and again, I appreciate the time from the committee, but it's really critical right now for law enforcement because we can't go out and just hire people off the street and put them to work. It's not like, and no disrespect to people that drive, a truck, but it's not like hiring a truck driver to go out and, you know, climb up in the rig and fire it up and drive off and deliver a load of stuff. There is a lot of time and the liability associated with what we have to do. In the jails, if you don't have adequate staffing in that jail, we get sued because inmates are now suing us because we're not providing them adequate care. So, again, just a couple of quick moments I wanted to take to make sure the committee understood some of the other factors. The testimony that you heard from the sheriffs, I think, is a true testament of the problems that Oregon is facing right now. And I can tell you that my partner across the river, Sheriff Jason Myers, the president of our association, he has trouble with jail overcrowding. Polk County, fortunately, 12 years ago built a brand new jail, and I don't have a problem with overcrowding. True facts. You talk to Salem officers, you talk to some of the folks in Marion County, and they will tell you when they're following up on crimes with criminals, they've asked them, well, what did you do over here in West Salem, which is part of Polk County? Answer is, we don't do crime in Polk County because they keep us in jail. So thank you, and take any questions.
Sheriff, thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Specific questions for Sheriff Wolf?
Again,
thank you, sir. Appreciate it so much. With that, I think we have covered our law enforcement officers. I'd like to call up a final panel, Ray Kopitka from Roseburg. Please join us.
Thank you for inviting me, co-chairs, members. Ray Kopitka, Roseburg, Oregon. I'm also a managing administrative member for the NCSA, or the National Constitutional Sheriffs Association. And the vast majority of our members are Western states sheriffs. So we see this from every state's perspective, and I have to tell you that if you brought them all up here, their stories would basically be the same. So any state that the ONC affects, that PILT, PERS, any of those issues, they're all facing the same situation. The thing that worries me the most, and I think our sheriffs today have alluded to it, we may end up with a situation where we're back at the wild, wild west. And I don't think that that's anything that any of us want to see. This is a huge problem, and in listening to the questions from the panel to the participants, I think I'm going to change what I discussed. I've sent a lot of information ahead. I do recommend that you watch the video. I realize it's a long video, but I think it's time that we come up with solutions to this problem and we stop addressing the symptoms. We must get back into the forests. This is not a situation of the environment. This is a situation of power, control, and money. When you have the Equal Justice Act paying out to the environmentalists over $700 an hour in attorney's fees to bring those suits, that's a heck of a money-making industry. And we really need to be realistic about this. This is an issue of jurisdiction and authority. We must understand what that jurisdiction and authority is. If the sheriff's offices are mandated, they have to be funded. And currently, in looking at the various counties and what's occurring there as far as budget hearings, which are currently going on, I don't think that they're addressing the issues in the best possible manner. If there are offices or departments that are still standing, those offices and those departments and agencies need to be cut first before a constitutionally mandated office is cut. And these sheriffs are working at bare-bone minimums, dangerous minimums. Somebody is going to die. Those lawsuits that can be incurred because of that could be devastating to the counties and force them right over the edge. Over 18 counties in Oregon alone, and probably higher than that, are currently on the verge of bankruptcy. This is a serious situation. We have to work our natural resources. It is inevitable. We must get back into the forest, and it's not just the timber. It's also our mineral wealth. Right now, with the mismanagement that's been going on by the U.S. Forest Service, because they can't do it, we are on the verge of astronomical fires, probably worse than the Biscuit Fire. We have set ourselves up for disease, insect infestation. We have depleted our wildlife because of the mismanagement. The birds can't see to hunt. There's nothing for the deer to eat, although the elk are enjoying what's growing up, so we have seen an increase in elk in some areas. So again, like I say, this is an issue of getting back to, number one, our states taking over, understanding their jurisdiction and authority, and number two, the counties taking over within their county borders the management of those natural resources. It is absolutely critical that this occurs, because as long as the unemployment rate is at the condition that it is at, which I agree with every one of them up here, it's double what is being stated on the books because of those who have fallen off, those who have taken part-time jobs, and I'm not talking about 20-hour-a-week jobs. I'm talking about 5, 3, 1-hour-a-week jobs. This is ridiculous. We cannot continue like this. It's not that there's no place to sell the lumber. There is. It is disgusting to me that we have mills that are shipping in lumber from Canada to produce, to fill their orders. Something is terribly, terribly wrong with this picture. And I think those are the main issues that need to be addressed. And that's why I encourage you to watch the 2-hour video, because it directly addresses those issues, the legalities, and how to get back to work in our forest. Every single thing in this room, everything that we use on a daily basis, that we touch, that we drive, it is derived from our natural resources. Without working them, we have nothing else. You know, for 3 years, we've known that these monies were going to go away, that the PILT, the SRS, the Title II and Title III funds, at least 3 years. Now, there has been much lobbying to keep them coming, and unfortunately, you know, it's got to end sooner or later. PILT in lieu of taxes is a joke. We need to have our lands back on a state level. We need to take back what is rightfully the people's land, and the counties need to start managing them in a manner that is productive instead of destructive. Anything the government gives, it can take away. Just remember that. I think I've covered all of the major points. I think the one thing that I do want to remind each of you, and I would request that each of you remind those that you present back to, is that you've taken an oath, and that oath is to the health, safety, and welfare of those that you represent. Each one of these sheriffs that were up here today took the same oath, and they put their lives on the line every single day. I hear of departments, or rather offices, that are, you know, working, like Gil said, one person is going out on these calls, and they do it because of their dedication to their job. And like I say, it's not just in Josephine or in Douglas or in Curry. It's all over the western states. This is a bigger picture. Go to the American Lands Council website. Representative Ken Ivory, who's also attorney, and he's the head of the council, American Lands Council. There are solutions. There are other states and counties working at taking back their lands, at improving the employment structure, at improving the economy, and it is working, because as long as we have the unemployment rate that we do, the chances of any levy, any tax increase, is pretty much nil. The people have gotten a little smarter and a lot more disgusted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for traveling from Douglas County this morning. Questions specifically for Ray? Thank you very much for coming. Colleagues, with that, I'm going to close the informational hearing on the update in public safety on ONC counties. Co-Chair Hoyle, any comments closing for, we've had discussions looking forward. Elizabeth will continue to work with us. I think we'll watch what has happened with the ONC County board folks. Also what happens later in the week from the Senate on the memorials. And in 2 weeks, we'll come back together and revisit those issues.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I just want to thank everyone for coming. I know you have a lot to do and are doing way more than just your job, and have come a long way. I only wish that every single member of the legislature could have seen this presentation. I will personally do whatever I can to get people to look at this information, because I know that my colleagues in the metro areas, they have challenges, but they don't have anywhere near the challenges that we've got in timber-dependent counties, and it is a reality that I think a lot of people are completely unaware of. So I will do my best to get that information out, and again, I want to thank all of you for being so eloquent and appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Committee members, further comment?
Thank you.
Elizabeth, anything further?
Yes, sir.
Thank you all very much for attending, and with that, I will close the House.